Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio has been very, very good to me. I am happy, happy, happy to tell you that. I am also very, very happy to greet you today in another warm, lovely day that heralds the spring. Spring is definitely on its way to Northeast Georgia, and I'm happy. I want to thank you for your time today. We are discussing an item today of great, great importance. And please excuse me. I am I'm going to return today to my format of opening with the IT moment and closing with the health bite and continuing from there. But you know, on the days when I do a complete show on health, then I'll close with a book review. Yeah, that's what we'll do. So today we are going to do this. We're going to do the IT moment. Then we're going into the topic, the discussion, which is women's history through the lenses of Downton Abbey. Then we're going to take a pause, and then we are going to continue women's history through the lens of Downton Abbey. We're going to do a brief health bite, a book review, then we're going to wrap it up and take it home. Okay. Excuse me. The first thing that I want to tell you about my Blog Talk Radio show is that I love it. You know, I'm starting to publicize it more and promote it more, but I love what I'm doing. And I have also made some further strides in the IT that make me love it even more. You know, I was telling you last time about the app I had found on Google Plus, with Google Plus voice typing, that is such an outrageously fabulous thing to use. And now I have perfected my skill in using that, and I'm just making better use of my blog spot. So you see, what I do is I write a post. I made an article, and I then added on to all of them. I posted in my blog spot, which is thehealthreverend.blogspot.com, and then I put it on my LinkedIn page as well as Facebook. I rededicated myself to my writing efforts, because I really do want to be able to officially, really and truly, excuse me, think of myself and present myself to the world as a writer. In order for me to do that, I need to be writing. I don't just need to be writing, but I need to be publishing. So I read a blog by Jeff Goin, G-O-I-N, and I agree that there's a really good way to not write a book, and that is to do pretty much what I've been doing. That is to say that I was thinking about it a lot, and I was talking about it a lot, and I was reading about it a lot. I just simply wasn't doing it a lot or at all, really. So I moved myself over to where I went back to that. So I decided that every day I will do this for a minimum. I will write for 30 minutes or 500 words, whichever comes first, and I will exercise for 30 minutes, and I will read something health-related for 30 minutes every day. Excuse me. So what I have learned since then, though, is that there is a need. If you are going to do something like I want to do, like you're going to write and you want to publish and sell your items online, you really need a website. Okay, I've known that for some time, but what I did not know was the pieces of putting it together and connecting it all. But I'm getting clearer on that. So then when you get ready to make a website, the next thing you want to know is what to name it. And then after that, you name your website, you get some pictures, you get some, make yourself some tabs and some pages, and then you put some links in there, and you got yourself a website. And so that's going to be my big thing for the upcoming weekend. The other big thing for the upcoming weekend is to complete my pending ebook, because I want to write my ebooks, but of course I want to sell my own ebooks. I don't want to have to go through Amazon and sell my books for 99 cents. That to me is just wrong. Okay, so maybe you will see from time to time, you'll hear that people sell a lot of books on Amazon for 99 cents each, but you would make a lot more money if they cost $5.99 instead of 99 cents. You know what I mean? And the whole idea for doing this is to make money. So that's where I am with the whole thing. So that's my plan. And I am, so that's what I'm going to do. So that is it for the IT portion of the show. Now let me just ease on over here. You know, today we still are in day 10 of National Women's History Month. And today I feel a complete compulsion to speak on this because if I don't, who will? You know what I'm saying? So we're going to do that. And I also remember that Thursday is when we have tea time with the Health Reverend. And no matter what else we talk about, we will be having tea. Today's tea is African Rooibos, R-O-O-I-B-O-S. And I like this tea because it is naturally decaffeinated, and I'm dedicated to this tea because it only grows in Africa. And so that's where I am. So women's history through the lenses of Downton Abbey. Now, if you have been watching this show, you know that it just ended. The entire series just ended. And, well, some people are just sad, sad, sad about that. Others are just pretty much indifferent. And then there's me. I am I'm almost holding Downton Abbey in complete contempt because, you know, what happened was that I watched that show, and I watched it a few seasons on TV, and then I watched it God knows how many times online on YouTube. What I realized was that that show was giving me a very good lesson in every ism that I had ever known about. Maybe not Zionism, but all those others, you know, the sexism, classism, patriarchism. Oh my gosh. They even made a really feeble swing at racism. If you remember that show, if you just think about it, you probably come to a point of thinking that it was, there was something about it that was comical. And sometimes it was. And then there was something about it that was romantic. And it was. And as with any other show, it gave us an escape. Well, listen, there isn't any way, truly any way, to be entertained by a show. Well, this is what I saw when I looked at it anyway. It made me see why it is that classism is such an integral part of American Western European life. Now, I do understand that it's not just America and Western Europe where we find these isms, but being that we're talking about Downton Abbey, that's where we begin. I want you to just look at how many times, for example, did you hear Lord Grantham tell somebody to shut up? And even if he didn't say shut up, he said something that let them know that he was tired of listening to them. There was the entire house, the upstairs and the downstairs, radiated around his comfort. And any time he was going to be discomfited, the whole house had to be reset. That was upstairs. Downstairs, now, this is the part that really makes me heartsick, is the effort that the downstairs people went through to see to the comfort of the upstairs people. If you ever get a chance to, you should read a book entitled David Walker's Appeal. And David Walker talks about the things that you do to make an African into a slave. And one of the things that he talks about is that you have to first imbue them with the sense, the owner's superiority. You have to make him believe that you are superior to them. Then, one of the other things that I remember the best is that you have to make them stand in fear. So this happened somehow. Somehow or another, the European thought system that we presently live under today has been in full force for many years, you know. It didn't just happen the day before yesterday. But remember how everybody downstairs lived for the service of everybody upstairs. How, I'm sorry, how the people who lived downstairs did everything that they could and everything that they could think of to enforce the values and protect the values of the people who lived upstairs. That is a very good example of internalized oppression. If it is good for the house, that was an expression that you heard a lot. If it's good for the house, then that's all that counts. If you can't do this, that, or the other thing, because it does not uphold the honor of the house. Mind you now, the people who lived upstairs didn't really give a damn what happened to those people downstairs. If they did, well, they didn't really let you know it. You know, it didn't show. I want you to remember how that dude was always castigating someone on behalf of the upstairs family, just in case somebody downstairs was going to do something that would somehow or another be offensive. Remember how he almost never spoke a kind word to anyone who worked under him, and that was everybody who lived downstairs. And it was because he was the butler, and the butler was the most important person downstairs. He was the downstairs equivalent of Lord Grantham upstairs, and he made sure that nobody forgot that. One other item that I remember so painfully is the sexism. The internalized sexism, where no matter what happened, the females upstairs and down were subject to any ranting and raving came their way. Any disrespect, any offense was to be taken, and taken well, because the male who had just spoken was the superior of the female who had just been offended, and she had no recourse. The last season of this show for me was all downhill, and you're probably going to wonder, okay, then why did I keep watching? Oh, I just did. But anyhow, it just looked like it was just unraveling. But the thing that hit me the hardest in the head was that one show, I think it was next to the last one, that one show where the butler has married the household manager, and he got mad about something. He got mad because the upstairs people had decided to come to the cook's bed and breakfast to let the public know that everything was fine, and he didn't think they should do that. He didn't think it was good for them to go into her house because it was a house of ill repute. And he said, "I've always known that women were ruthless, but I never thought that I would find this proof in my own wife." And he said it with such hate and acid that you would have never guessed that at the moment he said he was actually talking to his own wife. It was pretty astonishing to see, and it was even more astonishing to look at the expressions on the faces of the females in the room. It was his wife, the maid, and the cook, but nobody could defend them. And then the other, for me, the heartbreaking classism, the reason it was so heartbreaking was, for me, was because there was so much deceit involved. And, you know, everybody had a secret, and everybody was trying to outlive each other's secrets, and always using that person's secret to control them in some fashion. And I think that one thing that all of these isms have in common, the thing that connects them all, is that no matter which one it is, which ism it is that we're talking about, exists for somebody's benefit, and somebody is always doing it to control somebody else and to keep their own illusion of superiority and greatness alive. That's probably the greatest message of all the viewings that I had of that show, but it also is likely the greatest that I have ever studied or read or heard on the topic of classism, sexism, elitism, racism. It all comes down to someone controlling someone else. And another thing that happened often throughout the entire show was that Lord Grantham was always talking about how the old ways were fading away. He and that stupid butler, they were always talking about how their way of living was changing. So the butler was saying, oh, this is my way of living, and I like living this way. I like being the butler. I like being the overseer of the downstairs people. I like having people shudder when I speak. And as long as I can do that, that means that I am a little bit closer to the upstairs king. And as we know, the upstairs king was very, very very close to God, because there was nothing that he did that he had to answer for or that anyone dared to criticize. And people who lived under his thumb in fear were aware of his likes and dislikes and proclivities. They were aware of what he would approve of and not approve of. And so they spent the entire 6 seasons of that show keeping things from him, but at the same time using these stories against each other. You may recall the opening episode where the older sister had a Turkish gentleman who died in her bed. No one ever mentioned it throughout. No, someone did mention it too, but not appropriately. So we're going to continue this again. We're down to 90 seconds, so we're going to pick this up again later this week. But this week's book is entitled Natural Choices in Women's Health and Healing, published by Prevention Magazine. I suggest it to you because it has a great plethora of alternative therapies, including water therapy, aromatherapy, reflexology. So we'll pick this up again next time. And until then, live well, drink tea. See you, bye.